Hello and welcome. You're listening to SAP on Azure Talk. My name is Ravi Kashyap.
And I'm Nathan Weaver. And Ravi, I'm wearing a blue shirt today. And I'm doing this in honor of our conversation that we're going to have on, are we talking about moving all the way from whatever I'm running today, moving to potentially moving to S4 or moving into the cloud or just moving in general? And, you know, we always talk about, or we've started to hear more in the industry talking about a greenfield approach or a brownfield approach or a bluefield approach. And I've heard bluefield actually mentioned a lot more recently. And I kind of laugh because I personally know that bluefield is trademarked by S&P. So what we're going to do today is we're going to have a conversation with Mr. Darren Shaw from S&P. Darren, why don't you go ahead and say hi and give us a quick intro.
Hello, folks. First of all, I thought this was Joe Rogan's podcast. I think I'm in the wrong spot, but okay, I'll stay anyway. No, seriously, guys, thank you for having me. Yeah, Darren Shaw, I am the North America cloud leader at S&P. Joined the company back in October of last year. I've been working in the SAP transformation space now for about 3 decades.
You know, I've heard of Whitefield too, but I don't think that's related to SAP. So we'll stick with Bluefield here.
Okay.
So Darren, I do know S&P recently acquired another company called DataWard. Were you guys in the same business?
We did a lot of similar things. I think the big difference, and this really filled a very important gap in our skill set, is that they are excellent in migrating BW as well as providing archiving solutions. So for example, as opposed to just moving all of their historical data and just keeping that from prod to prod when they move things into Azure. Now they've got options where they can easily and quickly move that historical data into your blob storage or your Azure's data lake solution or whatever solution that they want to get the most out of that data.
We'll get into technology details in a little bit, but for a person like me who is more familiar with greenfield and brownfield and whitefield, what is bluefield?
The summary of greenfield is you're essentially, it's a do-over. And so the millions of dollars you spent on SAP previously, it's all out the window, which gets you lots of transformation, but it's a throwaway and you're looking at probably 4 to 5 times the amount of time and cost. On the other hand, you got brownfield, which is essentially a technical upgrade. You get no process improvement, no innovation out of that. We fit somewhere in the middle. And so what Bluefield does is it allows you to pick and choose the data that you want to migrate, the data that you want to upgrade, and allows you to target that strategic focus first. And then you can migrate and do process improvements down the road as you feel that you need to and that you feel that your culture can withstand. So you get the benefit of having to being only to move the data that you want to move and then improve the processes that you need to improve now.
So, Darren, I'm cheating a little bit because I'm very familiar with S&P. You know, I got exposed to Steele Abernathy, which I think, is it Abernathy? But anyway, I've known one of your presidents for a very long time, just from some prior companies. I remember that when I first got exposed to S&P, I was like, oh, there's no way this can actually work like it's being described. And I just remember the technology approach to this was pretty interesting. But I don't want to go into technology yet. Can we just spend a few minutes talking about the use cases here? I think when we talk about Bluefield, I think most customers are saying when they do a Bluefield, okay, then I'm just going to create some kind of S4 shell and I'm going to take my data out of my old system and put it in there. Yeah, I can let you kind of talk to that business case. But I also know there's a bunch of others out there because, you know, I'm an old Star Trek guy and I like to talk about the whole Borg, right? I remember the old growth through acquisition without assimilation, right, was always a problem for companies because they would acquire somebody and then they wouldn't pull them into the culture or they wouldn't share the systems. And then you had a whole bunch of disparate systems out there.
Right.
So I also know that with S&P, there's a use case where you're taking multiple SAP environments and you have some secret sauce to merge those together into one new environment, right? Let me just say it like this, Darren. Can you just kind of walk us through what are normal or typical use cases where somebody's going to say, I really need an S&P to come in and support this?
Right on. I tell you, the best example I can provide is where we partnered with you and a local SI down in Australia at Coles supermarket chain, about 2,500 stores across Australia. Here's their issue. They were being spun off from the parent company. So they went from a business unit and a profit center into now being a standalone company where they had now brand new statutory and reporting requirements. Now, on top of that, they had about 3 terabytes of data. They wanted to move quickly, not only to S4, but into Azure. Here are the problems, though. They need all new reporting. They had a time crunch because they were also going through a major supply chain transformation using Ariba. And while they were doing that, the corporate company surprised them with, oh, yeah, by the way, keep doing that, but we're going to spin you off. So they had timelines that they had to align with their Ariba implementation. They had done no S4 prerequisite projects, so no new GL, no Unicode conversion, no business partners, no nothing. And so they're thinking, well, based upon the timeline to do all of that in a typical linear fashion, they're looking at about 18 months of project time. And they said, we need to do this in 6 to 8 months. So they weren't getting the right answers from everyone that they talked to. They brought us in with our software. Here's what we did. In one go live, we automated all of their pre-projects, their prerequisite projects. So the Unicode conversion, new GL business partner. We carved out the current and prior fiscal year data that they wanted to move to S4 and to Azure, which was out of that, out of their terabytes, the current terabytes ended up being about 900 gig of their entire system. They kept their downtime to under somewhere around 15 hours and everything done in 5.5 months versus the 18 months that had been planned if they're going to go in a linear fashion, doing all the pre-projects first, then doing the migration to S4. And then after that, moving into Azure. Did it all in one shot.
One quick thing here, Darren. I'm not even going to ask. I'm going to put emphasis on what you just said.
Yeah.
It made me smile thinking I'm going to put the right emphasis on the wrong syllable. I think it's important for us to stop and consider those prerequisites that you just talked about and why S&P can bring in some secret sauce to this. Because, a lot of companies had made Unicode conversions years ago, or maybe they've switched. I always laugh when I hear somebody talk about new GL. New GL is like, 12 years old? I mean, it's like
old new GL, right?
Old new GL, right? But I think it's important, I always laugh at when SAP first released the thing they called the simplification list, and it was 156 pages long, and that was the things that you needed to do to get to S4. And there was nothing simple about the simplification list. But I can appreciate what you say when you're talking about the fact that you can skip over the new GL approach, or not skip over it. It's just you're taking care of it by creating that shell. You can take care of the not having to go through the Unicode piece because you're basically just doing the fresh install. Hearing that and just talking about the ability to speed that up, it just has me excited.
I tell you what, historically, any one of those projects that I talked about would scare the bejesus out of some people, right? Just doing a Unicode conversion makes people freeze, right? Just doing a business partner conversion, just doing the move to Azure or just the move to S4 alone would stop folks in their tracks, primarily because a lot of these companies don't know what's underneath the hood. They're afraid to do an upgrade. They're afraid to do a migration because they think half the stuff's going to fall on the floor. So when we do a detailed analysis, we show them, look, here's the stuff that's going to move nice and easy from ECC to S4. This is what's going to work in the cloud. Here's all your current interfaces that, and then this is what's going to have to move to APIs, right, going forward. By the way, we've done all the mapping from whatever version of SAP you're running through all the S4 HANA versions up to 2020. We've done those mappings. So whatever you have in warehouse management, for example, is guaranteed to work in the new EWM that's going to be running within S4. So all that you don't have to worry about. But just in case you are worrying, we've got automated validation procedures and automated testing in that process to double and triple check to make sure that what functioned and worked in warehouse management in ECC is going to absolutely work in EWM, in S4, in Azure.
So if I can finish my 18-month project in 5.5 months, I got a lot of vacation time, right?
Absolutely.
Focusing on technology side a little bit, S&P is the company name, but what's the software, or is there a software? How does the technology architecture work?
Our solution is called Crystal Bridge, and that was developed. We initially started as an upgrade automation company. And so we started doing those mappings from, let me go back here, right? 2.0b, to 4.6, and then from 4.6 to, from 4.6b to 4.6c and so forth. So there are elements that are proprietary, but a lot of our executables, to load our software on a system, it's a simple transport, right? It sits on top of the SAP system. There's no, real, customized language that we're using. Pretty basic, right? It's a simple transport, essentially on your source and target systems, and then running our software from our cloud kind of as a go-between to pick up messages. So for example, the source system says, I'm ready to send data to Azure, sends that message to our cloud version. Cloud sends it to Azure saying, hey, they're ready to send. Are you ready to receive? Yeah, we're ready to receive. Send that message back and then go. So it's minimally invasive. Your system isn't going to come to a screeching halt when you run our software and we have our tracers, for example, to track deltas as we're doing that migration, right? So we're moving the history during uptime. And then we've got these little triggers to monitor deltas in particular tables as we get closer towards go live. So really the final go live and that cutover is really just a very minimal data set of stuff that has to get transferred. That's basically like the what's the last stuff that's changed prior to the move over.
Where does the conversion happen? So you said a transport in source system, transport in target system, but you are mapping from old system to new system and in essence conversion, where does that happen?
Think about like as if you're copying your laptop onto a new laptop, right? So we take the applications and your personalizations, right? So that's why you start with the empty shell. You've got no data. So I have a 30 terabyte system. You've got maybe one terabyte representing the apps and the personalizations. Now, okay, what do we move over? So we run the programs in our software up in the cloud. Says, okay, if you see this, now maps to S4. You see this field, maps to this field. This table, now maps to this table. So for example, in S4, you've got AC DACA. So we know that AC DACA is populated by these, you know, legacy ECC or, you know, legacy SAP tables, does those automated mapping. So when the data comes into the new environment, Crystal Bridge is mapping and upgrading and changing that data to fit into that S4 format in the shell. And now that shell can sit in the cloud, that shell can sit in the data center, that shell can really exist anywhere.
Let me ask a quick question. So, Darren, I just want to make sure I've got this right, you know, as we're talking about this and the technology that's involved. When you talk about that shell, right, that's going to be the end state is going to be the new SAP production system or development or whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever. It's going to be the new.
Correct.
So I always thought about the blue field as I'm going to merge in the data, but I'm also going to be able to have that new system that's going to have a lot of my configuration that I did previously. As a question, that S4, is that a fresh install that you're then bringing across configuration, or is it something that you bring a shell over and then you upgrade it into S4? Like, what is that capture system or that end system? Is that a fresh install with new configuration or brought across somehow or through a client copy or whatever? Like, what is that?
Yeah, so in the case of S4, it's a new install. So the customer owns the licenses. That new install is installed in our shell. So you've got basically the application, but it doesn't have the data. So what we do is that we then bring over the data secondary, right, after that fact. Now, where it gets kind of dodgy for me, because I'm not an expert in this area, but in terms of, you know, roles and authorizations, that's kind of an area where I'm a bit fuzzy on. So I can't talk to some of those other personalization elements or, you know, customization elements. But from a data standpoint, the customer owns those licenses. The shell is created, you know, with that software that they're authorized to use. And then our program does that mapping where if it's ECC, we do that conversion as it's, you know, before it hits that S4 system, we're doing that conversion and that mapping from the ECC functionality to S4 functionality.
Your software Crystal Bridge, where does that reside and how does it connect to Azure subscription, for example?
Our current software, I guess our home-based software, right? That's that communication hub that I talked about previously. That's in our cloud. And like I said, we install a version of Crystal Bridge onto the source and onto the target. And so our cloud-based version kind of sits as that communicator and that go-between. Say, okay, now do this, send this, catch this, you know, convert this, do this reconciliation. And so kind of that's the control tower, if you will.
Am I exposing my data through internet or was the security there?
No, the security. So our cloud provider, we're basically leveraging their security protocols, right? Now, obviously, you know, from a security standpoint, on the customer side, we live with how good or how bad the customer's current security protocols are, right? You know, identity and access management, firewall, all that kind of good stuff. But obviously, when we're moving that to Azure, Azure's already had that discussion about, you know, this is a security that we highly recommend. So we're really, you know, we're not using our own security protocols that may be a bit dodgy. We're basically leveraging the security protocols of our personal cloud provider. And at the end of the day, where that target is, you know, in Azure, as we're talking here, it's going to be leveraging your own security protocols.
You know, sometimes it sounds like magic. I know Ravi always makes fun of me because I just say that cloud is magic. I think that it is important to discuss that. You know, with S&P, and now that you've actually bought DataVard, like yep. I've known both of those company names for 15, 20 years, yep. Right? And I think it's important to point out that you guys have a very long relationship with SAP. And yep. I'm not sure that a lot of people recognize that as SAP has had products, and you don't need to say any product name or anything like that, but SAP through the years has grown up by taking products from vendors, if you will, and partners, and then making it their own and rebranding it and everything else. I guess what I want to say is I've seen S&P and DataVard for many years and being very tightly wound with SAP. So I guess I would just like you to say, yes, can you confirm that what I'm saying is true and that you guys have been in tight partner relationships and that this technology that you're doing is not like it's somebody that was doing this outside of SAP and then trying to make it work for SAP, right? Crystal Bridge and the relationship grew up with SAP in mind, right?
25 years worth of very tight partnership. So yes, I can absolutely confirm that we had not gone rogue. We're not some radical organization that built some software that just happens to work with SAP. Everything's been done under the eyes and the blessing, by the way, of SAP. In fact, when SAP started their selective data transformation group, we were the first of, I guess, now four or five that sits in that group. And that wasn't a group that we decided to create on our own. But that's one that, you know, SAP backed and established. So we are absolutely no stranger to SAP, a long partnership.
Yeah, Darren, I remember when that group was created, and out of that came a lot of the products like TDMS or the client kind of operations where you can selectively pull and or mask data out of one environment to go into another for testing or whatever you needed to do, right? So I just wanted to point out that this isn't like something new. Like, you guys have been baking this in for many years.
We've actually supported, now, even though I've been talking about Bluefield, we have, at the client's request, or might say demand, our software has supported Greenfield projects when required. But, Bluefield.
I can see that for master data. I mean, moving master data across, you're still going to move master data no matter what you're doing. So I can definitely see that.
Exactly.
25 years is a long time, and the cloud that we know as of today didn't even exist then. So looking back, comparing what you used to do versus what we do in cloud, what kind of optimizations and agility have you seen?
We had, for example, we had a very simple, way back when, a simple interface discovery tool, right? So how many interfaces do you have? How much data is going inbound versus outbound? You know, where are the communication protocols, which was handy, right? When you want to just move from your on-premises to a data center or data center to data center. Now, understanding those communication protocols is mission critical, like I said, when you're moving from interfaces and, you know, EDI to APIs. It's one thing to set up a new S4 system within Azure, but if you had connections to outside systems or vendors, you got to make sure they work, right? So tools like ours, which served a value early on pre-cloud, now have a whole nother value proposition in just very small instances like that. We were, in fact, really up until maybe 4 years ago, we were focused on S4 migrations and we got the occasional cloud inquiry. Now, all of our discussions are, I want to move to Azure, but I'm kind of nervous because I have all these pre-projects and I got this S4 thing and I'm nervous about this, you know, the 2027 deadline or whatever the new deadline is going to be next week. How do you help us out? That's kind of been the big change. So there's always been an interest in making the most of their SAP investment, but now cloud has become really the opener. Like, I want to move to the cloud, but ... And then that's where we come in to help them with the ... part.
I like the example that you also brought up too, Darren. I get the S4 work, and obviously that's really hot and heavy, and it will be through 2027 all the way through 2030 probably. I also see the touch points in with what, you know, I always call it MAD, right? Mergers, acquisitions, and divestitures. So yeah. I see that you guys also play in that space, just how we kind of talked about it before. Even you were talking about a divestiture scenario that you had. We also, you know, we talk about, hey, how do I have an SAP system that I may want to merge with another SAP system? And that comes into play as far as the growth by acquisition with assimilation, right? So there's a lot of use cases that I think S&P just brings some differentiation that a lot of companies don't try to tackle. I can appreciate it. That's why I think it's important to make sure that our listeners understand the alignment that you guys have back with SAP, because you're not talking about doing real simple things here. I don't think of S&P as being a simple company. I think of you guys as tackling the stuff that's hard.
Right on. Look, I mean, if you have, you know, half a terabyte system, you're doing a pure rehost, right? Not changing the OSDB combo. There are plenty of companies out there that can do that. We're not trying to do a land grab for every single solitary deal out there, right? Where we add the most value is when you've got multiple systems you want to consolidate, where you've got to do a carve out and you've got disparate data, disparate master data numbering amongst those systems. You've got 30 terabytes. You really don't know how many customizations you're using. You haven't done any of your pre-projects and you're trying to maintain ROI, right? And now, and then also, yeah, oh, by the way, we also, you know, the CEO says, you know, we're going to move to Azure by 9 months from now. After the CIO faints, you know, he or she gets up and goes, okay, well, how am I going to execute?
That's right.
So we prefer to help with the real messy, nasty stuff.
So SAP used to have this product called Landscape Transformation or SLT. And I think they renamed it to SAP DMLT. It's called Data Management and Landscape Transformation. That seems to do a lot of what you're talking about. So do you have an informed opinion about that product versus SNP?
I do. So look, not just because I've worked with the software for 30 years, but I think SAP makes, you know, makes the best enterprise software in the world, right? They're number one at it. And the creation of that tool, very, very understandable. Here's where DMLT falls just a tad bit short, and I'm saying this with absolutely no disrespect intended, right? DMLT works great for homogeneous migrations, ECC to ECC, S4 to S4. But when you move from ECC to S4, oh, and you want to do an OSDB change, oh, yeah, and you also need to do this prerequisite project, DMLT can't handle that and can't handle multiple projects consolidated into the same go-live. They also don't have automated validation and verification. So that at the end of the day, that still has to be done in your traditional manner. Whereas that is completely built in and you can run a series of audit reports that will show point A to point B, point A to point B, point A to point B, all down that line. And that can be a challenge for some customers. And, you know, thank goodness they have max attention. So, you know, in some cases where that mapping went askew and things don't work, SAP will, of course, come back in and fix what they broke. But the thing is, again, if they had that automated validation, you wouldn't be having all these nasty surprises at go live.
So you're saying that SAP does a lot of things well, and this is not one of those.
Right. I mean, you can't do everything.
So, guys, I got to be honest with you. I haven't gotten over Darren calling this the Joe Rogan podcast yet. So I'm still stuck on the beginning of this thing. So, you know, because I absolutely love Joe Rogan, but I'll tell you, some of the interviews he's done with Elon Musk have me scared to death half of the time about what's going to happen next. So, yeah. You know, now I guess I'll be spending the weekend going back and listening to some of the old or actually he's got so many. I love him being on Spotify now. Huge fan of Joe Rogan. So it's just kind of funny. And I always mess up his intro of the, you know, workout by day, podcast by night or whatever the hell the whole thing is. But anyway. So, Darren, I just have to say, you lost me when we started talking about Joe Rogan from the very beginning. So now I've just been confused the whole time. So thank you for that, Darren. And Darren, I do appreciate you coming on today and talking about SNP. Like I mentioned before, that I look at you guys as doing the hard stuff. And there's a reason that we're going to call you or that you're going to get called in by a customer. It's not the easy stuff. It's the hard stuff. And that's when we call you guys.
People have different levels of interest from what's the strategic business value to, you know, how does it work way, way, way deep under the hood. We have folks I'd be happy to talk to anyone at any time about the real detailed stuff or all the way up to the high level, wherever you want to talk, we'll find the right person for you.
And I know you guys are always at the events, right? So I can always find the Crystal Bridge and the Big Blue. If we ever do events again, I should say, fingers crossed here, when we do events, we can find you.
I am allegedly going to the ASUG Utilities Conference in San Diego on the October 18th and 19th. So it hasn't been canceled yet. So we'll see.
That gets my attention real quick. My parting thoughts is more of a question. Where am I getting my blue shirt that says Bluefield?
Oh, we have boxes and boxes of them. They are in our New York office, but no one's been there in about a year and a half. So hopefully they have not been all stolen.
All right. I'll be sure to send you my address.
Okay.
All right,
Thanks a lot. Had a great time.